50 miracles, I try to say every Seder at the very, very end. Usually by this time, everybody's completely, completely gone. Like, if you thought people were going for Nirta, when people come to this part of the Seder, it's really, it's not even close to anybody paying attention. And I really love going through it because the 50 miracles of Kriyas Yom Sufer, by far, they make the Seder. They make everything happen. But they're not always listened to. So here's the deal with them. They're written down by the Ni'am Lo'ez. Sefer Ni'am Lo'ez writes down that there were 50 miracles that happened at Kriyas Yom Suf. Not like what we read in the Seder from Rabbi Yossi Aglili, that there were 50 makos at Kriyas Yom Suf. Nor is it like Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Kiva, that says there were 250 makos at Kriyas Yom Suf. Nothing like that. This is dealing just with 50 miracles that happened at Kriyas Yom Suf. What was happening during that time? I split them up. I went through the Ni'am Lo'ez and I split them up into different categories. 18 miracles that happened for Bnei Yisrael, 20 miracles that happened to the Egyptians, and then 12 in the aftermath of Eretz Mitzrayim. What happened to Eretz Mitzrayim at the very, very end. Now we're going to try to go through them and try to explain them. The first one is an easy one. Everybody's heard of these. They're not so hard. Number one was that there were Anani HaKavod that went with them into the Yam Suf. They had clouds of glory. Doesn't get much better than clouds of glory. That surrounded them, obviously, on all sides. Each side, obviously, the four sides around them, plus on the bottom and on top. And they worked as moving escalators. So whenever they wanted to walk, they didn't necessarily need to walk. If somebody was older and couldn't normally go somewhere else, he would just be propelled, so to speak, from one side to the other, went automatically from one side to the other. I'm sorry, no, Shalomatari. Is that okay? I'm so sorry. That was number one. Number two, the first time they went down any Akavu, they traveled 120 mil. That's a give or take about 60 miles in one day. In one day. Everybody was able to see when you were inside the clouds. You could see outside the clouds. It was as if the clouds weren't there. They didn't see anything from the inside of the clouds going out. But nobody could see inside the clouds. From the outside of the clouds, all it looked like was white clouds. So they couldn't see anybody in the inside. They couldn't see Bnei Yisrael unless HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted them to see anything. But from the inside out, they were allowed to see out. So that's all miracle number one. That's the first thing that happened for Klal Yisrael, all with the Anani HaKavod. Number two, Paro's army ran for 2 days straight to catch up with Klal Yisrael. 2 days straight, no stopping, no resting, no sleeping, nothing. They had to catch up to where Bnei Yisrael were, and Bnei Yisrael had walked. Granted, they had walked back a little bit, but they had walked about 4 days of walking. It took them 2 days of straight running on their horses with the chariots and everything, in which they had gone as far as they could, and not one of the horses nor the Egyptians, the soldiers that were running, none of them were tired, none of them got sick, there were no problems with them whatsoever. They kept running the entire time through. That was miracle number two. Miracle number three, the cloud behind them became a solid cloud. Instead of it being an open cloud where in theory you could throw something through it, it became an absolutely solid cloud. And bouncy. Said if somebody threw something against it, it would bounce back off the wall as if it was hitting some sort of a slingshot going all the way back there. But Bnei Yisrael were still able to see through it, even though it became that solid piece of whatever cloud would be if it became solid. It was still something that was there. Number four, spears were thrown. Now, the Medrash says this. This is very hard to understand. So I'm not so sure. There were 600,000 men that were at Kriyas Yom Suf, right? How many Jews were there at Kriyas Yom Suf? If you count women and children and old men?
3 million.
3 million, right? The Yosef Nuziah actually brings down 3.6 million. But 3 million sounds like a doable number if you count all those who were under 20, over 60, and all the women that were involved. So let's say we're dealing with 3 million people. 3 million people, the Medrash says that there were 300 Egyptians at Kriyas Yom Suf for every Jew. You want to do the math? 3 million Jews, 300 Egyptians, times 3 million. That means there are 900 million Egyptians that went to Kriyas Yom Suf. That's after Makkos Bechoros. It's after Makkos Bechoros. And there was no nation that had 900 million people, especially after they were just decimated by massive Makkos. There's no way that could... So how this metric works, I'm not so sure. But let's say the numbers were extreme. The numbers were extreme. Let's even say 30 to 1, which is another medrash, and 3 to 1 is another medrash out there. Let's go with that to 31 or 3 to 1. Either way, if you throw that many spears, eventually something's going to hit. If everybody throws a spear 300 to 1 or 30 to 1, something is going to hit one of Bnei Yisrael, but not one arrow nailed anybody in Klal Yisrael, mostly because they were bouncing off the walls of the air, of the clouds and hitting them right back where they were. But miracle upon miracles, none of them were killed by the arrows that were bouncing backward. They were only hit in the arm or the leg, so that they'd still be able to be alive to go into Kriyas Yamsuf. Nobody was killed outside the Yamsuf by throwing spears at Klal Yisrael. That's number four. Number five. Here's what happens. We all know the famous. You guys know the Gra, right? The famous story with the Gra. And Moses Mendelssohn, yeah, there was a rock. There was a rock that was found in Russia. They brought it over to the Germans, because the Germans were the scientists of the time. They brought it over in the late 1700s. And they said, we want to know what the properties of this rock is. We think it's a new element. We're not so sure exactly what it is. So it was. It was probably some type of uranium. It doesn't say what type of an element it was, but it was probably some type of radioactive material. They brought it over to the Germans. The Germans had absolutely no idea. Moses Mendelssohn said, there's one Jew who knows everything. If there's anybody who knows the properties of this rock, it's going to be him. Moses Mendelssohn knows. And Moses Mendelssohn said, the Vilna Gaon knew absolutely everything. So let's bring it to the Vilna Gaon. Let's see. They sent it over to Vilna, the western part of Russia, eastern part of Lithuania. They gave it over to the Vilna Gaon. Vilna Gaon, the people that saw him, he turned the rock around in his hand twice, and he asked for a cup of water. They brought him a cup of water, and he put it inside the cup of water, and the water started to evaporate immediately. Became gas almost immediately. It separated the hydrogen and the oxygen from what they were. So it must have been some type of radioactive substance. We don't know exactly what it was. And he says it's something similar to sapphire. That's what the Gra said. Send it back. It's something similar to sapphire, and it's a very, very rare stone. You're not going to find too many like it. Sent it back, and Moses Mendelssohn heard that it was a type of sapphire, and he said, that's it. That's Shapia and Kriyas Yamsuf. Now we have a natural way to understand how they split the sea. Because Moses' staff was made of sapphire. The measure says that it was 40 pounds of sapphire. So when he put the sapphire staff over the sea, he was able to make the entire sea split because it causes water to evaporate. So that's how it happened. Now we can understand how Kriyas Yamsuf happened. That answer went back to the Gra. The Vilna Gaon yelled out loud and said, he's a kofer. He denies God and he has nothing to do with Judaism. Because of him, the Pasuk says, Harem es matcha, lift up your staff, uneteyez yodcha alayam, and stretch out your hand over the sea, so that no one thinks that it's your staff that's making the sea split. Nobody thinks that way. It's your hand, so to speak, that's making the sea split. That is me, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that's what he ended up doing. He lifted up the staff into the sky, put his hand over. We all know Nachshon Ben Aminadav jumped inside the sea himself. He was the first one to jump in. And immediately what happened was a wind came and blew on the bottom of the sea, dried up the ground of the sea before the river even split, before the Yam Suf even split. The bottom of the sea was entirely dried up. And then it went upward and split from the bottom up as opposed to the top down. It split from the bottom all the way through and then went up, and it became solid walls on each side. By the way, this is one of the only things that the Ten Commandments, the movie, got right. You can see how it's clearly made a path, and then you see the sea splitting to the sides. They got that one right. I think by accident. I just don't think they had the ability to do it. I'm sorry? Yeah, sure, like one. This one, right over here. They got this one taken down. You know, they took this one there. But that's what ended up happening. That's number five. Solid water, not ice. We're going to see it's not going to be like ice. Number six, they went 300 mil high into the air. That's give or take about 150 miles. Said anyone who is anywhere near that part of the horizon would be able to see the sea all the way up in the air. Everybody in Eretz Canaan, everybody Amalek, anybody that was around would be able to see how high the sea had gone. 300 mil into the air. Seven, it was split into 12 equal splits. One for every shade of Klal Yisrael. You know, the Hasidim say there were 13 splits. I figured, because Ephraim and Menasheh are split, right? And you have Shevet Levi also. Shevet Levi was there as well, so you'd have 13 splits for them, right? Now, hold on. Before we get to that 13th split, which is one of the craziest things of all time, there's another part of this that's really crazy. It did not split straight across like you picture it. It didn't go straight across. It went in a semicircle. It's brought down by the Rambam in Perek Dalet of Pirkei Avos, the Chizkuni in this week's Parsha, in Parsha B'Shalach, Perek Yud Dalet Pasuk Choptes, Ibn Ezra, again in Perek Yud Dalet Pasuk Choptes, Yumiam Loez brings it down, and it's also in Tosos, in Erchen, Daptes Vavam and Aleph. Not too many people have done Erchen. For those who have done Erchen, along with Yissi, for those who have seen it, those Rishonim say that it did not split straight across, it goes on the side. In fact, if you look in the Tosfos itself, in Erchen, you'll see he shows you a picture of how it's split over in a semicircle. And so too in the Rambam, if you look in the Gemaras, where it has the Rambam on Pirkei Avos, you'll see that it's split in a semicircle. Now the question is, why was it split in a semicircle? What was the purpose of such a thing? Why would you need to do that? To trick the Mitzrayim, right? So the Bas Ayin asks the obvious question. He says, then why did the Mitzrayim go in that way? They saw the split, they saw all the Jews go in, and then they saw the other split over there. They're just like, oh, cool. We'll meet them right at the other side. So when the Jews come out, they're just like, we got away. And all of a sudden, they meet up with the Mitzrayim. Why wouldn't the Mitzrayim go the other way? So two answers to the question. Number one, remember what happened when they got to Kriyas Yam Suf? They couldn't go anywhere. Why couldn't they go anywhere? They couldn't go in back, because who was there? Egyptians. What was in front? Yam Suf. What was on the right and the left? There was mountains and wild animals. So what the sea split to was it split around the mountains, so that they wouldn't be affected by the mountains. So the Mitzrayim actually couldn't see where the split went to. They saw that it was a semicircle, but they didn't know where it went. The Bas Ayin says no.
Well, it was all
the water split itself, right? And they couldn't get to the other side.
As they walked.
It was supposed to be entirely split before they even walked in. Mm. Then we're going to see what happens later on. But it was supposed to be entirely split. Everything was split all the way beforehand. The Bas Ayin says Choshech happened. And with Choshech, the Mitzrayim had no idea where they were going. All they saw was their hands, whatever they had in front of them, and they were pushed into the sea, so they had no way of getting to the other side to see what was there. The Mitzrayim themselves didn't have to. It was everybody around that had to see it, meaning the nations of the world who were all around. The Mitzrayim themselves, they didn't care. It didn't matter what they were going to, because they were going to be dead in another 10 minutes anyway. I'm sorry? Only Mitzrayim had Choshech, because we're going to see that the Makos came back. But yeah, only the Mitzrayim themselves had Choshech for that to happen. There are other answers. The other answer is, and the Bas Ayin says the most unbelievable answer. Bas Ayin says they did go into the other way. They went in the other side of the split. And they wanted to meet up with the Jews. HaKadosh Baruch Hu did such a crazy miracle, they missed them. They went in the other way, and the Jews went this way. Somehow they completely missed them. Completely missed them when they were trying to turn around. That's when they got caught and the Kriyas Yam Suf crashed down on top of them. That's the Bas Ayin's answer. Don't get much crazier than the Chassidus Shatara. Right there is that. Now the 13th split. Does anybody know what that 13th split was? Chassidus Shatara is mamish unbelievable. I'm sorry? There you go. The Be'er Mayim Chaim. The Be'er Mayim Chaim is another Chassidus Sefer. Brings down. Dustin and Aviram had their own Kriyas Yam Suf. Them by themselves. They stayed with Paro. The Yonasim Nuzil brings down, it says, Va'amar Paro Livnei Yisrael. Seems to be that Paro's talking about Bnei Yisrael, Nevuchim Heim Ba'aretz, that they're confused in the land, they don't know where they're going. He thought they were confused, so let's go chase after them. We're going to go chase after them. Says the Yonasim Nuzil, Va'amar Paro Livnei Yisrael. Paro said to the Bnei Yisrael who were left in Egypt, Dostan and Aviram. Dostan and Aviram never left. They never went with Moshe Rabbeinu. They didn't go with Moshe, they didn't go with Aaron, they didn't go anywhere. But when they saw what happened at Kriyas Yam Suf, they did tshuva, and they had their own Kriyas Yam Suf. Their own Kriyas Yam Suf, a 13th split that was made dafka for them that nobody else was able to get. The Be'er Mayim Chaim says that's the power of tshuva. You can have your own split. He gives the Rav Wolfson has a whole piece on why, what in the world, what are they getting such a thing for? What's the remez? What's the Medrash trying to tell us? He tries to say, everybody throughout the Chumash. Whenever they do something bad, somebody says something good about them. No matter what they did, when the Pasuk says, Vayishkav Reuben is Bilah Pilegesh Aviv, Reuben slept with Bilah, the concubine of his father, and what does Rashi tell us? He didn't sleep with her, Chas V'Shalom, right? What did he do? Bilbu Yitzui Aviv. He moved around the bed of his father, and it's as if he slept with her. when it says by David HaMelech, David HaMelech was together with Bathsheba, she was a married woman, the Mephorshim say what? But it said, yeah, but there was already a get. Tosas tells us there was a get. Uriah had already given her a get before he went out to war, and as long as he didn't return, then the get was valid. So therefore, David HaMelech was never together with a married woman. Chazal always show you exactly what was happening. Even Korach, they say unbelievable time is what Korach was thinking, what he was doing, why he had thought that way. The Meraglim, how many different answers have you heard as to why the spies did what they did? There's hundreds of answers. Hundreds. Every sefer that's written on Chumash has another reason as to why the spies did what they did when they went into Eretz Yisrael, why they spoke Lashon Hara. Everybody speaks about these things. But nobody ever says anything good about Dathan and Aviram. Nobody does. You know why? They're so great. They're so great, Dathan and Aviram. They're beyond our comprehension. The only person who can comprehend what Dathan and Aviram were thinking the whole time and arguing with Moshe Rabbeinu is Mashiach himself. And when Mashiach comes, that's when he's going to bring back Dathan and Aviram. He's going to say, Dathan and Aviram really get tshuva. That's why they get, there you go. That was my question that we had last week. Why did they get confused with Nadav and Aviv? Everybody always makes a mistake. Dathan and Aviram, Nadav and Aviv, Nadav and Aviv, the two sons of Aaron. Everybody sits there and is like, Nadav and Aviv, Dathan and Aviram, I don't remember the difference between them. Isn't it unbelievable? Two of the greatest tzaddikim of all time, Nadav and Aviv, are getting mixed up with Dathan and Aviram, two of the biggest rishayim of all time. There's something about Dathan and Aviram that we just don't get yet. And we're not zocha to be able to get it yet. Mashiach is going to get it. He's going to bring them back. That's the 13th gezer. The last, you can call it the last split of the sea. When everybody else is done, when everybody else is fine, and everybody's crossed, and everybody's safe, and everything's good, that's when all of a sudden Dustin and Aviram are like, wait a second, we also want to do tshuva. At the very end, that's when somebody comes along to be able to help Dustin and Aviram. That's the concept of what was happening over here. So that was number 7. Number 8, we all know this one. Water throughout the world split at the exact same time. If you were drinking a cup of water, then it split, which stink if you were drinking. But if you weren't drinking it, you were just holding it in the table, then it was pretty cool because you just saw it split. And you're just like, well, what is that? How is that? You should know Rabbi Stolper is here, Rabbi Cohn's father-in-law. You can ask him. There are 100%, there are historical records in which other nations have something in which there is a split in their water. I don't know exactly what it's referring to. He didn't tell me details or anything like that, but where they saw a split in the water, and they attribute that to Kriyas Yam Suf. They didn't know at the time. They had absolutely no idea. Just say the water split. But they found it in Macedonia, Persia, wherever it was, somewhere in the Middle East. But they found this type of a concept where it was there. Even Alexander the Great has some type of a concept where it goes into this. It's just, it's a crazy thing altogether, but that's what it was supposed to be. Okay, that was there. Water throughout the world split. We know about that. The boats, oh, the fish themselves split, and they still lived. You could see the split fish, in which one end was over here and the other end was over there, and they were still perfectly fine. Nothing happened to the fish. And then when the sea got back together, then they came back together and they were 100% whole again. Unbelievable. Number nine is, it became an ohel on top so they wouldn't be hit by the sun. It was congealed water up on top, and then there was water on the bottom when they first went in, but it was still light inside. It was as if the sun was shining inside Kriyas Yam Suf, so it wasn't extremely dark like you'd assume if you were inside the middle of water. That's what it became. Slowly but surely, number 10, the sides of the sea became clear with windows in them so they could see the other shvatim going through on the other side, and there were jewels and pictures up on the wall that they were able to take that were given to them by the malachim from Gan Eden that they were able to take from the walls and bring with them as they were going through Kriyas Yam Suf. Number 11, the floors became from the water dirt, and then it became marble and mosaic floors. Marble and mosaic floors for them to walk on as they walk through the sea itself. Number 12, grass popped out of the floor for the animals to eat as they were going through, so that the animals wouldn't be hungry as they were going through Kriyas Yam Suf. So anything they wanted was right there. Number 13, fountains of sweet water came out. Remember, they're in the Yam Suf. The Reed Sea is not fresh water, it's salt water. But there were fountains of fresh water that came down from that water itself for them to be able to drink so they could be there. Number 14, the water stayed for others to be able to drink, or it went back into the sea. If they were done using it, it automatically went right back inside. Number 15, if the kids cried, fruit trees appeared out of nowhere in the bottom of the sea, in the middle of the mosaic floors and everything that was there. It popped out, and the fruit was able to be eaten by the kids for them to be able to have any, whatever they wanted. It smelled like Gan Eden, and they could hear singing of Malach. singing of Malachim. I don't know if it was elevator music. I have absolutely no idea. But it was good music that they heard in the background while they were going through the sea. Number 16, there were no hills or ditches. You can imagine, the bottom of the sea is all over the place, especially the Red Sea. The Red Sea is, anybody who's been to Eilat, haven't been Zocha yet, who's been scuba diving there, is red coral reef all over the place. It's not easy to walk on coral. Coral is sharp. You can't walk on top of that. It became stone and marble floors, and it went on top, and it was even. It wasn't like a regular seabed, which is all over the place, going up and down and up and down. It became even. Even when they went down into the sea, because when you're going down into the river, the sea bank, it should be way down low. It became so easy to go, it felt like they were walking evenly the entire time, so that the older men and the older women wouldn't have to like fall down a little bit and then have to climb up at the very, very end when they came out of the sea. It became extremely even, so it was there. Number 17, it was an extremely loud noise that happened when the sea split. It was an extremely loud noise, but there were no miscarriages by one woman in Klal Yisrael, except by the Erev Rav. The Erev Rav miscarried. Anybody who was from the Erev Rav and was pregnant at the time miscarried at that moment. It was quiet when they were inside the sea, except for the music that they heard in the background. Number 18, the last thing that had to do with Bnei Yisrael, is that even though it was a semicircle, and you can imagine if you have a semicircle and you have a bunch of them, right, 12 or 13 semicircles, the one on the inside is going to finish their going around much quicker than the one all the way on the outside, right? They all finished at the exact same time, which means they had kfitzas aderech, somehow to skip out parts of where they were going inside that semicircle, and they all found themselves in the exact same place at the exact same time. That's what happened by that. That's number 18. That's all with Bnei Yisrael. That's just what we got. God thought of everything when we were in the sea. Like, anything you could think of was right there when we went into Kriyas Yam Suf. Now, what happened in the Mitzrayim? There were 20 altogether. Number 19. All the Makos came back for the Mitzrayim. Now, personally, I don't understand that message entirely. How did Makos Bechoros come back? I'm not so sure how Makos Bechoros happened there. Dam. I'm not so sure what happened with Dam. I can understand Sardea. I can understand Kenan. I can understand maybe a bit of Arov if there were alligators there. Maybe there were Arov. There were wild animals eating them as they were going through. I'm sorry? So maybe the animals followed them in. Right, the animals followed them, and that could be with Arov. Dever sounds very hard because the horses were driving them into the sea, so it seems very hard that there was Dever. But Tzfardea, Kenan, and Arov can definitely be. Shechin, Barad for sure happened. The hail came down on top of them when they were in the sea. The Arba went into the Yam Suf so that they would be there for when the Mitzrayim came. And Choshech, definitely. But Makos Bechoros, Dam, and Dever is very hard to understand. For those three to have happened in the Yam Suf, I still don't get entirely, but the Makos came back for them. Number 20, Mitzrayim came in as Bnei Yisrael was getting out. Okay, so some say that they were just out, that's exactly when the Mitzrayim came in, so that no part of Bnei Yisrael was still inside when the sea started to close down, so they wouldn't be worried at any moment. Number 21, they ran in willingly. Says the Ramban, this was the biggest miracle by far of all time, that unlike what we said with the Basayim before, that they went in with Choshech, right? They ran in willingly. They knew what they were getting into. They knew it was the Yam Suf. They knew it was split, and they were like, oh, what are we doing? Why are we doing this? But they ran inside as if they had no cares in the world, knowing it was the greatest miracle they've ever seen, and they ran inside trying to chase after Bnei Yisrael. That's number 21. Number 22, the floors turned into thick mud, so everyone started to get stuck. Number 23, it burned the horses' hooves off, so that anybody or any Mitzri that was standing on the ground, their feet or their shoes or the horses started burning. The bottom of their foot, the bottom of their shoes, whatever they had, or the bottom of the horses' hooves started to burn off. Number 24, when they fell down, if anybody would fall down to the ground because the horses were, you know, I don't know what the word is, when they get up on two legs, when they rise up on two legs, rearing up, that's all it is? Okay, I guess so. So we'll go with that. When they were rearing up on their legs, if anybody fell down, buckling?
Bucking.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah. When they were bucking, now this sounds good, right? Because when they went up, then the Mitzrayim fell down. It felt, even though it was mud on the ground, it felt like they fell from a couple stories up and they fell down on the ground. It was hard. It felt like they had fallen from a very, very far place, even though it was just like from the horse down to the ground. Number 26. Number 25, the mud hardened when they fell down on it, so it felt like they fell on something hard, aside from the fact that they also fell a couple stories down. Number 26, the horses ran straight into oncoming waves as it started to come down. The Gemara says that they saw pictures of female horses in the waves themselves, and they started running toward the female horses. Number 27, the midstream and the horses ran faster now than they ever had before, and none of them were tired, even though, again, it was 2 days that they had been running after the Jews. Number 28, one wheel fell off every chariot, so that the chariot could not go in the normal way, and started turning all around and started tumbling everywhere. Number 29, ash and arrows started shooting down on them from open air on top, because the sea was starting to come down, so the congealed water on top went back to the sides, and it was open air, so things started raining down on them from the top. Number 30, the same wind that blew it up melted down the waters to be able to go straight down the congealed waters that were on the side. Number 31, unlike snow or ice, this is what you were saying before, Moshe, it melted immediately and immediately came down, said it was as if it wasn't there, wasn't like water coming down slowly but surely as it came down. It immediately fell down on top of the Egyptians. Number 32, this everybody knows as well, the three different ways of drowning. Some of them drowned like sticks, some of them drowned like stones, some of them drowned like bricks. There were straw, wood, or stones. Those were the three different types that they drowned at. So it was different types of how much pain they were in as they were drowning. Don't worry, they didn't die yet. Number 33, the Yam chased them if they ran out of the sea. If they ran backward out of the sea, waves would come and grab them and pull them back into the sea itself. If they weren't just like that, if they were all the way up into the air, like Yochanai and Mamre, you're going to hear these names. Yochanai and Mamre are also known as Yonus and Yambrus. They're known as the sons of Bilam. They're all over the place. They were involved with the Egel Azov. Some say that they were involved with Moshe Rabbeinu who ran to Cush. They were with Bilam. Yochanai and Mamre, or Yonus and Yambrus. They might have been different children. It seems like they're the same exact person, Yochanai and Mamre and Yonus and Yambrus. I saw a sefer, Vinitzdak Kodesh, that says it was the same person. I don't know what his source is. He's the Tzadik Miranana. He wrote this sefer about 25, 30 years ago. But he says they're the same person. Either way, regardless, according to this Medrash, they flew up into the air to get out of the sea because they knew Kisha from their father Bilam. They flew up into the air and a hand from the Yamsuf went up into the air, grabbed them, and threw them back down into the sea to be able to drown them. That's pretty awesome. Others say the Yochanan and Mamre were part of Erevrav, part of the Erevrav. I don't know which one is which, but either way, that's one of the Midrashim that has number 33. Number 34, the Yam spit out the horse and its rider outside into the air, and then they turned around so that the rider fell first and the horse fell down on top of him. So if it's bad enough to be able to cannonball into the sea, then you have a horse landing on you. It can't be a lot of fun when that ends up happening. That's number 34. Number 35, horses stuck to the chariot and couldn't swim away because they had gold on them. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted all the gold to go to the Jews after the Kriyas Yam Suf was over. Number 36, some of the Mitzrayim were spit all the way up to the Mayim HaElyonim, the sky, which is burning hot. That's what they said. They were burned and stripped of their clothing, blinded by clouds, or the Asham that is up there in the Shemayim, and then thrown back down into the sea. Number 37, others were bounced up from the depths of the sea. They hit the seafloor, and then they bounced back up to be able to go there. Number 38, others were swallowed by the seafloor. Sand covered them and choked them while they were there. None of them were dead yet. None of them had died up until this point. Now, 39. This is the end, the aftermath, the 12 that come into the aftermath. Number 39. No Mitzrayim had died yet, so that Bnei Yisrael could see them spit out onto the banks of the sea, see who their captors, who the people that had afflicted them at one point were, and they'll be able to punish them for being able to do everything that they had done to them. They would be able to kill them themselves, and they would be able to point at them and show them who they were. Number 40, the land of Mitzrayim was lifted up into the air. Some parts of it were drowned, other parts of it were burned up, but they all either saw Kriyas Yam Suf or got involved in Kriyas Yam Suf by being there. The obvious type of answer for that would be some type of an earthquake. That would be that a Kadosh Baruch Hu quaked the land so that it would be able to see what was going on at Yam Suf. Number 41. The Mitzrayim were spat onto the shore, including the Malach of Mitzrayim. There's a question of the Malach of Mitzrayim, what his name was. Some say it was Mitzrayim. That's why it says, Vayar Yisrael's Mitzrayim Meisal Sfas Hayom, because it should be HaMitzrayim It's not Mitzrayim. What would that be? The answer is that Mitzrayim himself was the Malach of Mitzrayim. He was seen on the banks of the river dead, the Malach himself. Others say his name is Rahav. Rahav then became, because Malachim don't die, he became the Malach of Yishmael. Others say his name is Duma. Anybody know what Duma's job is now?
The lower house of parliament in Russia.
That's the strangest bit of information that Trivial Pursuit has ever come up with. But thank you, Vinyl. That's not what I was going to go with. I was going to go with the Malach of the Dead. He's mentioned in Brachos as well as in Erevin. The Malach of the Dead. Because Malachim can't die. But if they do die, like Mitzrayim's Malach did, Duma became the Malach of the Dead. So he now is the Malach of the Dead. He's the one that takes there. So it's either Rahav, Mitzrayim, or Duma, one of those three, but he was spat onto the shores. Number 42. Those who were swallowed up by the sand were brought all the way to the sand outside of the sea and spat up onto the ground where they were, and not just spat out from the sea, but rather spat onto the shores itself and popped up out of the ground. Number 44. All the gold, jewelry, and anything that they had brought into Kriyas Yam Suf was also brought up onto the shores and spat out right in front of Bnei Yisrael, so they would be able to collect all the plunder they could possibly get and bring it with them, including treasures from Gan Eden that Malachim had thrown inside that we mentioned before. All the treasures from Gan Eden that Malachim had put inside there also were spat on top of the shores of the sea, and that's why it took 3 days for the Jews to be able to collect all the gold and the silver and everything they had from the shores of the sea. There was so much, so many things to be able to grab from over there. That's number 44. Number 45. Anyone from any other nation that was hired by Mitzrayim to come fight against Bnei Yisrael was thrown out of the sea, and they lived to be able to tell everybody else what had happened and what they had seen. So they all lived to be able to tell everybody else. It's only Mitzrayim that died in the Yam Suf itself. Number 46, Paro himself, we know, either died in the Yam Suf, or he did Tshuva Gemura, became the king of the city of Nineveh, and lived an extremely long time. Almost 1,100 years, if all our Midrashim are correct, and Yonah lived at the time that we think he does, which is after Elisha Hanavi, Paro would have lived an extremely, extremely long time. Number 47, there's a machlokas what happened to Micha. Micha was a Jew who later on started idol worship at the very end of Shoftim. There's a question when exactly that story happened. Did it happen before Othniel ben Kenaz came up? Or did it happen during the times of Eli, when Eli was no longer powerful because he was very old, and Shmuel Hanavi was not yet as powerful as he would become? So there was a pestle from Micha. Some say that Micha brought that pestle into the Yam Suf. And that's why the Malachim said, Halu Ovdei Avodah Zarah, Halu Ovdei Avodah Zarah. Both of them, the Mitzrayim and the Jews, are Ovdei Avodah Zarah. Why should I save one of them because of the other one? So they weren't sure exactly which ones were which. They couldn't tell which one was which. Some say that Micha's pestle at that time was destroyed, and he later on made another pestle that looked like it. Others say that it miraculously survived, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu allowed it to go through, because we know Hashem is Charon Af. He has lengthy anger, and he does not get angry very often. He does not allow his anger to wrath immediately. He allows it to simmer a little bit until it happens later on. That's number 47.
Why would you miraculously allow the
we don't know
idol to survive? I understand if you wouldn't punish him, but why miraculously?
Corona. That's all it is. Corona. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu was waiting. Corona. I'm saying the wrong words. Erech HaPayim. Length and anger. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu was Erech HaPayim and allowed it to happen later on, instead of immediately destroying them right there, which he normally does. That was the idea behind it. Micha was a brick in the wall that Moshe Rabbeinu said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, why are you letting all these Jews die, by all these kids die, by being put inside the wall? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, I'm putting away all the thorns of Klal Yisrael. If you don't believe me, then take one out and try me, and you'll see what he'll become. That was Micha. Yes, he was part of Bnei Yisrael that sang Shira. They all sang Shira. Even the Erev Rav, yeah. And then he recreated it afterward. It could have been years later, but yeah, he was the one that did that. Not all of them are supposed to be, they're brought down by the Me'amloes, and all of them are saying, this is something that Bnei Yisrael, whether or not, again, we're not dealing with historical accuracy here. I could care less if you have Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure and you have their little time machine and go back in time and be able to see exactly what happened. I have absolutely no idea like what it was and what exactly happened. These are what the Midrashim want to be able to get something out of. Meaning, you should be able to get a geschmack and say to yourself, this is crazy. What a Kadosh Baruch Hu would do for Klal Yisrael is absolutely unbelievable. Whether or not this is what actually happened, happened with our very own eyes, this is what we saw, really doesn't matter for the most part. It really matters on what HaKadosh Baruch Hu can do for Klal Yisrael and what HaKadosh Baruch Hu has done for Klal Yisrael, you know, all our time being around. That's the idea behind it. Number 48, Vayar Yisrael means Yaakov Avinu had Tchias HaMesim. And he got up and he watched Bnei Yisrael go through the Yam Suf, waving at them as he was going through. Ki Ga'o Ge'ah. It's Ga'o, Gimel Aleph Hei, stands for Gimel Avos Ha'olam. The three Avs, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, all came by, and they watched. Other Midrashim say that the 12 Shvatim, whose bones were taken out of Mitzrayim, they got up and had Tchias HaMesim, and they led their Shevet through the 12 splits. They were the ones who led them all the way in front. By the way, the remez to that is Perek Pei, Pasuk Beis, in Tehillim. It says, Noig Katzon Yosef, that Yosef led them like sheep as they went through the Midbar. So Yosef HaTzadik himself was the one who went in front of everybody else. That was the line, it's from the Chidah, Ruchan Yosef David Azulai. They also said that they put his bones inside a skin of a sheep, and then the sheep had Tchias HaMesim, and that appeared as Yosef HaTzadik. That was also another line from the Chidah. That's another thing altogether. And the Akedah. Hara Moriah uprooted itself from its place, showed itself on top of the Yam Suf, and Avraham Avinu with Yitzchak, holding the knife right over Yitzchak Avinu, was shown to Bnei Yisrael as Bnei Yisrael was going through Kriyas Yam Suf. That's pretty awesome. Number 49. Bnei Yisrael were all zochet to see the Shechina above the Yam Suf after they had gone through and all the Mitzrayim were gone, including all the babies inside their mother's stomachs, as well as all the little kids that were born that were suckling at their mother. All of them got up and they were able to point and say, Zeh Keli Vanveyu, this is my God and I will glorify Him. And number 50, the 50th miracle was that everyone sang Shira with Ruach HaKodesh. Everyone had a good voice. Everybody said the right words, which I would assume would be extremely, extremely hard, including animals. All the animals as well that they had brought out, any cows or sheep or goats and anything they had with them, they all sang Shira along with Klal Yisrael. Nobody could sit there. We all know the lowest Shivcha saw in the Yam what nobody else was ever able to see. Even Yechezkel ben Buzi wasn't able to see what everybody saw at Kriyas Yam Suf. Kriyas Yam Suf was such an unbelievable feat. There's so much more to it, so much more of what we can go over Kriyas Yam Suf, but that's just the start of the 50 miracles. We'll stop with that. Have a great rest of Pesach.